Greetings. I'm Thomas Reed, and you're listening to the AT Banter Podcast. When this podcast is finished and you're looking for some more content, slide on over to Read My Mind Radio at readmymind.com.
Hey, and welcome to another episode of AT Banter.
Banter, banter.
Hey, wow, listen to that strike. That was impressive.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, this is of course, Ryan's been practicing. This is, of course, a podcast where we talk with advocates and members of the disability community to educate and inspire better conversation about disability. Hey, my name's Rob Minot, and joining me today, Mr. Cowbell himself, Mr. Ryan Flaherty.
Hello.
See, I gave you top billing because of that, cowbell strike.
I know, he did everything on that one. Everything.
Yeah, he did every bit of force. Yep. Hey, it's also Mr. Steve Barkley.
That's me again.
Yeah, here again.
Two in a row.
Yeah, right.
Impressive.
It's like you're taking after your Canucks.
Yeah, no, they haven't done two in a row in a bit.
Well, join the club. Hey, look who else it is. It's Liz Malone.
Oh, back in the cellar she goes.
Yeah. Here we go.
Yay. Welcome. Yay, welcome. Cellar.
How the heck is everybody?
Good.
Finer than frog hair.
Nice. I like it. The new finer than frog hair.
I have no idea what that means.
I don't either, but I like the sound of it.
Okay.
See, we gave him crap for the other day because he always says dandy, and we kind of called him out on that. So now he's changing up. I like it, though.
I think that's a new song title, Finer Than Frog Hair.
You know what? There you go, Ryan. That's your next assignment. Write us a song called that, Finer Than Frog Hair.
Oh.
I still haven't finished the Easter song. Give me a break.
We'll get
which
there.
Which could be another song. Well, excellent. Yeah, it's. I feel like spring is finally here. It's a beautiful day here in Vancouver.
Yeah, wait 24 hours.
Well,
that's supposed to be nice all week.
Yeah.
Nicely
Ryan and
done.
I subscribe to the same weather channel app.
That's right. You'd think we talked about these beforehand or something.
Yeah, really, right? Okay, you say that it's supposed to be nice all week. No, you do it. No, okay, well, so we got our
could
wires crossed.
Could we be any more unscripted, I swear?
I know. Great.
Squirrel.
Call this.
And I would like to point out that in typical Vancouver fashion, it is going to be beautiful all week and then rain on the
rain
weekend.
Rain on the week. Yeah, yeah, no. True. Let's hope not.
Yeah.
Let's hope not. All right. Well, enough of the weather report. Hey, let's get right to it because I am stoked about today's show. It's about one of my favorite topics. So, hey, Ryan.
Yeah, Rob.
What the heck are we doing today?
Our guest today is John Stark. He currently sits on the Media Advisory Committee for the Audio Description Project of the American Council of the Blind. He is also a moderator of the Audio Description Community on X, and he does so much more. John, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm always glad to swing by and talk about accessibility and audio description, movies, and just talk.
Love it. Okay, well, let's just start. Give us a little bit of a background about yourself, and then we're going to dive into all of those topics and much more. So maybe just a brief snapshot of who this John Stark guy is.
Yeah, I love movies and always loved movies. Always felt like I wanted to be a movie critic more than actually like working in film, directing or producing or anything like that. And I was kind of casually doing that online. I went to school for it. I have a degree in film, the cinema studies track. And, I could have done the other one, the production track, but I actually chose the cinema studies. And, I actually lost my vision about 7 years ago now. And I kind of hit a rock wall where I didn't know really what to do, and I had a website up and was reviewing and was trying to do things, trying to get my name out there, because there are like thousands of bloggers and movie critics and everything everywhere. Then I started watching things with audio description, and my world kind of came back together, and suddenly I felt like I could watch new movies instead of just listening to ones I had seen before. And I really wanted to start talking more about the audio description and the accessibility and reviewing, because there's, quality differences in some audio description, from some really amazing human narrated tracks all the way down to some really awful text-to-speech stuff that gets thrown in. So I really wanted to actually put the focus on the audio description community, and because no one else was doing that at the time. And that's how people have found me. And things have kind of just rolled from there. But I think it's just important to talk about audio description accessibility and normalize it. So many people working in movie theaters often don't know how to operate the equipment when they hand it to us. It's just so many things. And I just love having a place where I can talk about it and be a voice for other people who don't necessarily feel comfortable talking about it online or throwing up a YouTube channel or putting it on a website or anything like that. So
it is really interesting. I mean, we've been talking about audio description here on the show for years. And I really do feel like we've really been watching its trajectory as it's become more and more, more standard and more standardized. I mean, certainly we have a ways to go, but even if you compare it to say 5-6 years ago, it has come a long way.
Yeah, I think it continues to come a long way, but with that has come sort of a stronger advent in the AI technology field. And we just want to kind of make sure that we don't overuse that, because at the same time, movies and television, for a sighted person, it's entertainment. We sit down and we kick back and relax and just watch the show. And we don't want to get into using robotic voices again. I don't need the same voice that's narrating, doing my narrator on my phone or my computer to right. also be narrating the movie.
Yeah, well, we had Colleen Connor on from she runs an outfit called Audio Description Training Retreats. And, we had an interesting conversation about AI and, where AI could say work with audio description in terms of the process of creating your audio description, and, where we don't want it. And, certainly helping, in the sort of on the technical side, when it comes to say lining up a script or even, helping develop that script. But, I think that everybody pretty much agrees that something like AI voices, at least in their current, in the way that it's currently around, it just isn't something that we want, because it's too artificial still.
Yeah, I think there's also a place for it too, in helping a lot of people who create short form content on YouTube and TikTok and stuff like that. If we can create a program that would allow them to easily apply AI audio description, it could open up a whole lot of videos from people who are not going to put audio description on their videos right. otherwise. Right. And then suddenly we're opening up another venue for blind and low vision people to be able to enjoy content. So yeah, I don't disagree that there are places for AI, but Netflix has the money to pay for humans. So
true.
They can pay for that. Humans.
I was actually just down at CSUN last month and saw a company down there that was using AI to do more, not the full job of audio description, but just to create an outline for the audio description, and then you could go in and edit it. And if you wanted, you could record it yourself. But it also was using synthetic speech and some pretty. It was the most impressive synthetic speech I'd heard to date. But even they were, of the opinion, even with this product, that, this is just a tool. This is not the end all be all. This is a tool. And they were definitely targeting yeah. a lot of that stuff that, the legacy stuff that is not audio described.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, these companies, I've heard them talk before and representatives from the companies, and they have this massive back catalog of stuff that hasn't been audio described. They obviously don't want to spend all that money on getting it audio described. And they're looking at, can we use AI to get all these movies from and TV shows from, you know, pre-audio description eras caught up? And I get the need for that, but some movies, I think, have more of a present feel to it. Some things like Back to the Future, Indiana Jones, Star Wars. You know, I mean, like, there's certain films you don't want to make, like, lessen the quality of the film. AI audio description, it's in a weird place where theoretically it could work, but also theoretically I've heard audio description where at the same time they seem so confident in it, they just don't quality check it. Like, there's a film on Netflix right now called The Wages of Fear that uses AI audio description. The way I found out is, well, first of all, they're able to use variable speed on the voice. They speed it up and slow it down, which is how they fit the audio description in certain places. But then they said Granada launcher, which a human would have caught. They would have naturally said Granada launcher. They would have said grenade, because a Granada launcher isn't a thing. So,
I don't know. I've seen them launch Toyotas and stuff, but maybe a Ford Granada could fly if you had a big enough catapult.
So, I mean, yeah, it is little. It's little quirks that AI isn't quite ready for just yet. And you know, the human performance of an audio description. There are some narrators that do truly exceptional work, and they actually complement the piece. And when you listen to their voice, if it's cast right, it can actually really sort of round out the experience in a way that I'm not really sure AI can yet. I gave Dave Wallace, who narrated The Regime for Max, I was able to give him praise directly for his fantastic narration performance, because he uses tone and he uses these like really specific pauses, and he feels like he's in the show. You know what I'm saying? Like, it feels like the description, it's not intrusive description, but he's aware of what is happening on screen, and he matches it with his voice in certain ways. It's very creative, and I really liked what he did with it. And it's a thing that AI wouldn't have been able to pick up on. It's something that somebody who's also a voice actor would think of, you know, little things, little ways of saying things and holding a word out while we're kind of waiting for something, and he kind of stretches out the line a little bit, and you know, he does stuff like that, and it just added more. And I don't think AI can do that, but there's a place for it, sure.
We've had this discussion on the show before. You know, we're talking about how impactful, like, really good audio description can be to a piece of content, like, even to the extent of this can add value to just anybody who's consuming that content, whether they be visually impaired or not. You know, especially when you think about things like the script writers are using particular words to describe the action to sort of enhance, say, the emotion that that particular scene is trying to portray. So if it's a sad scene or if it's a tense scene, you know, the writer, you know, is using, you know, specific words to try to enhance that. And to the same degree, a voice actor can do very much the same in that voice performance. I think that really what the push is to try to elevate these tracks above just, oh, well, this is just somebody who's describing what's going on. Like, they can become a character in the piece or another layer of that content if it's done well.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Yeah, it absolutely can enhance a piece, and it can really make or break a film sometimes.
Sure.
Because really bad narration has turned me off of things before, especially if I'm already not really into the film. And then I've got this audio description track that's problematic. Because humans can produce problematic audio description too. It's not, Well, everything is not equal out there. But a great audio description track can actually I mean, I've enjoyed, there have been movies I didn't like, but I love the audio description track. I was like, man, this audio description track is fire. So, I've just been impressed, and I just kind of focus in on the audio description. I'm like, man, they're doing great work here. Yeah. And I become interested in something that I'm like, I don't really like the movie, but the audio description for this is great. You know?
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because I was thinking about this today, in preparation for the show. I was like, you know, if you had a really good audio description track, it could actually elevate the movie. Like, you could have a movie that has, like, say, shoddy, like, it has a good, say, it has a good story, but it has, like, really shoddy effects. And so something, so somebody who's, like, watched this movie would be like, oh, this movie's garbage. But if you take that same movie, and if you had a really good audio descriptive track and you have a good story, that could be a really super engaging, great movie for somebody who's enjoying it in a different way than, say, you know, watching it, where you don't have to, you know, worry about, like, bad effects or anything else.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I love when I'm about to watch a horror movie and it ends up being William Michael Redman. I'm like, this dude's voice is so perfect for this genre. I love his voice on horror films. It's just, he's got kind of a tough voice, and he has taken some really mediocre to terrible horror films and made them more entertaining because of the way he narrates a horror film, and he just feels right for it. Like Netflix's latest Texas Chainsaw movie that they had, he narrated that, and he was better than the movie. So, I really enjoyed it. So yeah, absolutely. I think there's so many reasons to do it that way, because then I can walk away from a film going, well, I like the audio description. It gives me a reason to recommend it instead of no reason, because if I don't like the movie, then I have no reason to recommend it. But if I have the audio description and I'm talking to other blind people, I can at least say, you know what, this has a great audio description track, and, you know, opinions are subjective. Maybe you'll end up liking the movie. At least I know the audio description is great. So,
And in fact, you know, as somebody who cited, like, I would be totally curious. Like, I would actually rewatch that movie. And just listen to the audio description, forget about actually watch, because it was a terrible movie. But maybe, you know, watching it like that, maybe it would enhance it. Maybe I'd actually enjoy it if I didn't have to, like, you know, watch the terrible acting and the terrible effects and everything else about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you might actually do that. The other one that I'll give a shout out to, I did a list of my favorite audio description tracks from last year, and I think I put this one at third, but I gave like a C minus, which, If I was a rotten, it would be like rotten if I was on the tomato meter. But it was that No One Will Save You that was on Hulu with sort of like an alien plot.
That's right.
I kind of like the gimmick. I didn't think was well done, but you know, the audio description track is just so well done for that film, and I just thought it was great. It's written by Jeff Heck. I'll just keep giving people shout outs. So Jeff Heck did the audio description for that, and there's like almost no dialogue, so the whole film hinges on audio description when you're blind. And while I thought the director failed in terms of, because he has dialogue, so it's like the people can speak, so it just becomes weird that they don't.
Right.
But that's what I found so weird about the film. I was like, so they can, they're just not. Silent Night did it a little bit better, John Lucet, because he really did avoid speech in Silent Night. But with this one, she even sings, and it's like, why is nobody talking to this film? It's just so bizarre. He never really answered. I felt like the director never answered that question, but the audio description, because of that, because there's nothing to talk. And I think when I did my review, I pointed out basically for a long chunk of the film, she's in the house. And I felt like Jeff did such a great job of describing the house, because at a certain point you kind of run out of things to describe. You're like, well, we've been in this room before. What else do I say about this room? You know, you've got one protagonist. So there's only just so much you can describe about her, but I always felt like he was finding new layers and levels of things to describe. And that's what I really loved about that film. So, yeah, it's got a really solid audio description. Not a great movie, but audio description is fire. So,
yeah, well, and that's a really interesting thing. And that's why I think that what needs to happen to really drive the industry forward is to really get the creatives involved. If they really understood that, hey, like there's this, you know, audio description that can really give you another layer of content.
Yeah, I also wonder what would happen if Hollywood creatives actually got involved and knew about audio description. There's an interview out there with Kevin Smith where he accidentally stumbled onto audio description for one of his films and just kind of started watching. He didn't even know what it was. And he was like, what is this? And like, it took him a while of finding it. I mean, he ended up, you know, liking it and appreciating that this existed because it allowed, he understood why it was there. But I was like, if more people could do that, I feel like that would be, you know, then they could maybe join in on the process. And first of all, they'd be really concerned about the quality and right. There wouldn't be any of this, robots narrating anything. That's, you know, right. I mean, Scorsese's not going to let an AI voice anywhere near one of his films, you know? So, yeah. they're going to want to make sure that it's the highest of quality, which only benefits the audio description community, I would think, because then they're actually getting supported by the creatives to make the best audio description that they possibly can, instead of doing things like, now we have a couple shows that are running that have one narrator on them doing all of the voices plus the audio description. And these are like shows that are technically considered American English language shows, like Tokyo Vice and Shogun, which have characters that speak in another language. Both of those are narrated by one person who does all of the voices, including for the females, which is disappointing and depressing. But I feel like if the people who actually made that show knew the audio description was like that they would be like, wait a minute. No, you know, I feel like somebody would step in. And the only reason that people get away with that is because I don't think enough people know, you know, I don't think they've ever listened to an audio description track, these directors and producers and writers and stuff like that in Hollywood. I think they, you know, unless they themselves need to use it, they don't know it exists.
That's right. So. Yeah, that's what I get the feeling of, too. I think that, you know, for a lot of them, it's just, you know, again, this is, they've already sort of, they're done with the film by the time it gets to, you know, one of the production houses that actually, you know, make the audio descriptive tracks. Yeah, they're sort of long gone from the process by that point. So yeah, it's the key is I think, you know, is educating the up and coming generation of filmmakers and creatives to say, hey, this is something else that you can think of. And it's actually exciting. And, you know, when we were having our conversation with Colleen, Liz came up with a brilliant idea. She was just like, you know, what needs to happen is that they need to just make an award for it. And the creatives will be all over it because, you know, we know how much they love getting awards. So,
well, you can get an award. The American Council of the Blind has been giving out an award for audio description through the Audio Description Project now for a while. So there's been a way to win an award for that. I think there's another way to win an award. I think there's a second award too.
Well, I was thinking more like bigger, like more like in the Oscar category.
I know, yeah, like the Oscars and stuff. But you know what's really funny about audio description is that the talent involved used to be able to get credit for doing it on IMDb, but the industry balked at it, and so they all got their credits removed. So we actually went the other direction with this. So now there's another website that sort of is like self-aggregating and trying to keep people's credits up because they can't actually be on IMDb with their audio description credits. So it would be nice, but it seems like the industry doesn't want that. So.
Yeah, like we've spoken to people at Descriptive Video Works, and they've actually started in the last year and a half or so listing the describer as in the credits as well. So they are being credited somewhere, somehow.
Oh, no, no. Yeah. In the credits of the film, but on IMDb, they're getting that you can't be credited for it on IMDb. You can't claim as an audio description narrator. So whoever you are as a narrator, your work that you're doing, you can't list it as, you know, if you're a voice actor. Wow. Like, for example, if you look up Laura Post, who, if you've ever listened to audio description, you've heard her voice like 1,000 times. Her IMDb is really small because it only is the things that she's done as voice acting. It doesn't include her audio description work. So that would be a easy example of somebody to look at and be like, wow. Because if you're familiar with how much audio description she puts out on a regular basis, her IMDb page should be like insane, but it's not. It's pretty tame. But I do agree they should give an award. Like they should try to make it more of a thing.
Well, you might be a little more familiar with. Didn't they make some changes with audio description, or at least the actors when they, I guess, renegotiated the contract? I mean, I don't know all the details of it at all. But I thought that there was an aspect to audio to that new contract, or at least it was maybe on the table at one point.
I believe it has to do with, and I don't think it had to do with audio description, because I know that these narrators worked through the strike. So it didn't cover what they were doing. They don't consider audio description to be voice acting. And where the fine line was being drawn was on shows that have foreign language, like non-English language that would normally be dubbed, because dubbing is considered voice acting. But if you're doing it through audio description, if it's an audio description narrator that's providing the work, then it's not. So they were trying to figure out how to define that. I think that's probably what you heard.
Okay,
and there is this really fine line as to whether or not you use the dubbing actors and then an audio description narrator underneath it, or whether or not you allow the audio description team to also create and basically read subtitles is what they're doing. So, But I think there are parameters within that. And often what you get is you'll be lucky if you get more than two voices on a project. Usually you get like a male voice and a female voice. There are some of the higher movie budgets and stuff have the ability to hire more talent to cover more characters. Zone of Interest, I think, had like 6 total narrators covering all of the voices. But you still have voice actors that are doing multiple roles. So,
okay, so let's talk about Mac the Movie Guy, the YouTube channel, the website. How did that all start out, and what's the deal with Mac the Movie Guy? Like, why the name?
It's actually kind of a really depressing story. It's something that I just want to hold on to and not give up. I kind of lived like in a small town growing up, and I didn't have internet right away. And I had a friend that our parents were friends, and I was visiting, and he already had internet. And when I was a kid, so he took it upon himself to sign me up for an email address. So I had an email address, but I didn't even have a computer with internet. So the only way I could do it would be to check it at the library in my town. This is the only place I had internet. But he signed me up for this ridiculous thing that I felt immediately silly telling people that my email was MacDaddy NLS. And NLS at the time stood for No Limit Soldier, because he thought he was really gangster. We were like 13, 14, something like that. So it was super, super tough. So I as soon as I got my own internet, I was like, I don't want to keep telling people that I'm MacDaddy NLS. Like, every time I tell an adult this, I'm just like, this is a terrible email address. And I was starting to play these online movie-related games and signing up on message boards and talking on websites like Ain't It Cool News and stuff like that. And I was looking for a name. And I came up with Mac the Movie Guy. and I kept the Mac part as a tribute to him. And as be like, well, you know, I kept your Mac. I just, I'm not the daddy NLS anymore. So I retired the other one and I went with Mac, the movie guy. That's where the Mac comes from. And my friend passed away a couple of years ago. So I really just don't want to change it because I was Mac, the movie guy for so long. And now to change it, it's like this weird, like last gift that he gave me that makes no sense. Because everybody knows me as John Stark, and then my channel's Max the Movie Guy. And it's like, I'm like, what is this? And I'm like, you know, not everything needs to make sense in life. Just go with it, and it is what it is. I don't know what to say.
Exactly. Yeah. Everybody has their moniker, right? You know, what's B.B. King's? What was B.B. King's real name? It wasn't B.B. I don't actually know.
Oh, God, I don't know. That's a music question, man.
I know. But anyways, my point is that listen, nothing wrong with having monikers. It's all part of
You gotta get Max the music guy for that question.
That's true. He's on next week.
He's Riley B. King.
Oh, okay. Just double checking.
Well, so I guess he's close. But I'm sure there are other people that have monikers. But so tell us a little bit.
Vin Diesel, that's not his real name.
Yeah.
His last name is not Diesel.
And probably not his, you know, his first name, Vin. I don't know. Is that even,
Mark Sinclair.
Mark Sinclair.
Yeah.
He's using part of his last name. His real name is Mark Vincent. Vin Diesel's real name is Mark Vincent. Tom Cruise is Thomas Mapother. So he totally changed his last name. So, Albert Brooks, the actor, his real name is Albert Einstein. That's obviously why he changed his real name. Really is Albert Einstein.
That's hilarious.
There's some people out there. So,
well, Rob, aren't you really? What was it? Something Bubbles Pickle Toes? Isn't that your real name?
Yeah, that's right.
That's
my given name.
It's on your it's on your passport, right?
You say that, but he could have like a celebrity father, you know. And I mean, we got some pilot inspector out there.
That's right.
One of their parents named their kid Pilot Inspector, so you know.
Yeah, it's weird things have happened.
Yeah,
that's what we're using going forward.
There you go.
It has to stay.
I'll write that into the intro. But tell us about then a little bit about how the channel has evolved, and what kind of things do you kind of cover on the channel?
For me, I try to cover as much as possible and get the content out there. So I do movie reviews, and I've been doing TV pilot reviews. I don't like binge watching TV shows. Like, it's just not a thing. I enjoy that cliffhanger. I enjoy sitting on a cliffhanger for at least a hot minute. I'm like, you went to the trouble of making a cliffhanger. I don't want to spoil it by immediately going into the next episode. So I try not to binge any series. So I usually just do pilot reviews. Right. But I do recap a couple shows that I'm really interested in. And I talk about the awards because I have fairly good knowledge, which has allowed me to bring in some other blind film critics. So we have like a little collective of us. So shout out to Alex Howard and Lee Pugsley, who have the Dark Room podcast. You can find their podcast and listen to it. I've had them both on my channel throughout awards season, and we talk about and predict the Oscars. And I've been on their podcast as well. And I've done 20 questions, which is, I've had people within the narration community on my channel, like Roy Samuelson, Liz Gutman, some other people, a couple times have sat in and just had kind of fun. And we've talked, not seriously, but opened up more about who they are so that the people who listen to them all the time or listen to the stuff they write know a little bit more about who they are. Not just asking them about like audio description, but asking them about like, what's your favorite color of Skittle or something, just dumb questions like that. And, but mostly it's, yeah, it's all just like film and TV related. I want to kind of present myself as a serious film critic so that I can show that blind people can be on the same level as everybody else.
Right.
My goal is to hopefully be in guilds with sighted critics at some point. I would love to show that we can be there and that we have stuff to contribute to the conversation. So, but I also want to talk a lot about audio description, and if the title has audio description, when I watch it, I try to talk about what I liked about it. And if it doesn't have audio description, I usually try to talk about why it needed it.
Right.
And almost every single time those movies get an unwatchable grade from me, because there's usually too much missing for me to be able to give it a grade or recommend it or anything like that without audio description. So, yeah, that's sort of everything that I do on the channel. And my website is basically just typed out versions of reviews and kind of the TV shows that I'm watching on a daily basis, because I don't want to put all my TV content on YouTube. But
well, you know, and I think that the important part of this is that, and this is why I think that your channel is great and why we need more of it, is that, again, it sends that message to the creatives that, hey, there are people out there that are going to engage with the content and get passionate about the content enough to create a YouTube channel where, you know, you're spending time reviewing movies and reviewing TV shows. And it's going to spread the word about things like audio description.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I'm here somehow.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
somehow I got here. So, yeah, it's, I'm not even monetized. I'm not even at 1,000. So
yeah,
hopefully you've got a lot of followers that can help me.
Oh, listen. Yeah. Are you going to see a spike in your analytics?
Oh, shameless plug to subscribe to me, please. I've literally met people. I have to say, like, because I haven't been blind for as long as some other people. I've met people who've been blind longer than me and don't know audio description exists.
Yeah.
And that concerns me.
Yeah, that is concerning.
So if my voice can get out there to anyone, it might reach a blind person who isn't listening to or watching anything but your podcast. And suddenly they're like, audio description, what is that? You know? And then they'll figure out and they'll ask their friends, how do they turn it on? And it'll just open up this whole new world to them. So.
Yeah, it really does. And, you know, you brought up the point earlier with movie theaters and, you know, we hear stories all the time. Up here in Canada anyways, that a lot of these theaters, you'll go to the theater and the staff won't have been trained on the audio descriptive headsets or anything, or they're all broken. That's historically been a real problem.
It's theater to theater. It depends on where you go. And a lot of the people that I know that are cinephiles that really go on a regular basis that are also blind find that it's helpful if you commit to it and go regularly and make sure you introduce yourself so that way suddenly your theater knows that you're not like an anomaly, that you're not just like one blind person who stumbled in one day off the street. It's right. Like, I will be coming here a lot. Please make sure your equipment works, you know, that kind of thing. So that seems to work for them in certain places. And then in other places, you were still getting, you know, this film is advertised online as having audio description, doesn't have it in the theater. That happens sometimes. The equipment doesn't quite work. There's some really interesting devices that are made for both hearing impaired people and visually impaired that you can actually wear, and it will give you like an audio boost for if you're hearing impaired. And then you can also control the audio description volume at the same time. So you can sort of actually do two things, which I think those are really cool headsets. Yeah. There's an entire theater in Connecticut, the Prospector Theater. That's a nonprofit that is run by staffs fully with people with disabilities, and every movie they play has audio description, or they won't play it.
Wow!
Every title.
That is
super cool. 100% commitment to audio description.
What a great idea.
And all their staff knows how to operate all the equipment, and they always make sure it's working. And yeah, really great stuff. There's some stuff out there when people really want to do it and really want to commit to it. You can do it. It's possible. So.
Okay. I got one here for you. Cause when I was reading up on you, I went in to see what reviews you had done. So I was looking up some of my favorite movies, and I couldn't find a review for The Princess Bride. So I can't judge you on that. but what I did find was I found a movie that I'd watched recently, and your review of that, which was Napoleon. So
yeah.
You gave it a B, and that kind of surprised me, because I really thought the acting fell flat on it. And that amazed me to say, given who the actors were.
I thought it was really sort of quirky and odd. And that's, I think, what I liked about it, is that I liked, a lot of people didn't like Joaquin Phoenix's performance because he felt out of place. And I get that. And Ridley Scott picked somebody who was an American actor and put him in this film and just let him just do his accent. But there are so many different accents in that film, and all these people are supposed to be playing Frenchmen, and no one really sounded French. They all sounded like whatever country they came from. From Rupert Everett with his strong British accent, Vanessa Kirby with her strong British accent, Harveen, you know, I mean, like, everybody had their own accent, but everybody just gave Joaquin crap. I'm like, no one sounds French in this film. Just like, they did the same thing with, the Ben Affleck, Matt Damon, The Last Duel. You know, those people with their accents, everybody was all about the accents of the Ridley Scott movie. I'm like, well, if you take the accent out of the equation, I don't think he's doing a bad job. I just think he's a weird casting choice, but I thought he did fine. Like he's a good actor, and I thought he really tried to give his best in Napoleon. But yeah, this is just a bizarre casting choice to begin with. But you know, I think Joaquin tried.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I never twigged on the accent thing as being what was bothering me about it until I read your review. And it's like, yeah, you know, you're right. it never crossed my mind.
He sounds really modern, which bothered a lot of people.
Yeah. But
he does that he does sound real. That is what he sounds like. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think you picked up something there that I didn't pick up on. And maybe that's really what was at the back of my head going, this isn't very good. But the
battle sequences in that, I mean, like, that's what Ridley Scott does really well. Is he does battle sequences. And I thought the audio description was really good on it. Just he did a really good job of the battle scenes and showing you where a cannonball could go and stuff like that. And
or what it can do.
I'm here because I like movies. So I sort of start off from more of like I try to walk into every movie with like a favorable opinion of it going in, and then it'll work its way down. I don't like giving bad grades. I tend to skew mostly positive. I try to find the positive. So if I don't like a movie, I really didn't like it. You know, I mean, like, it happens. I find movies that I'm just like, this is awful. This is just god awful. But in general, I'm really trying to find the stuff that I enjoy, to that cinema magic that always gets me caught up. So I found some of that in Napoleon, not a lot, but I mean enough to give it a B, which I would say is above average. I love Princess Bride, by the way. I would love to review that with audio description.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to hear what the audio description was on that.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm thinking about Ridley Scott, and I just feel like all he's really done in the past 10 years is given us movies that we didn't really ask for. Like, they're prequels to movies like we just didn't need. Like Prometheus and I don't know. Answering questions that nobody was asking. And now they're doing Gladiator 2. which weirds me out.
I think he's been kind of hit and miss. I did really like The Last Duel, though. I did actually. That was one of my favorite films of the year it came out. I really got it. I was really into it. I got. I really thought. I thought she did a fantastic job in that film, and probably deserved an Oscar. Her name escapes me now, but from the girl from Killing Eve. She did an exceptional job in that. I liked how he told the story from different perspectives. It was an interesting film. It's one of the better things he's done in the last 10 years. But yeah, the rest of the stuff, you're right. He's just kind of Gladiator 2. I don't know what he's doing. I got nothing on that.
Right?
I don't even conceptually understand why we're getting that.
No,
I really hope that it turns out to be a great movie because I love the first Gladiator.
It's
a classic. That was really where I began to appreciate his ability to do the battle scenes, because the battle scenes in that are so intense. But I loved him before from Blade Runner.
Sure.
You know, that was one of my favorite films. When Prometheus came out. Oh,
yeah. Oh.
I know. He has some absolutely heavy hitters in his resume, and it is very sad to think about that he is going to die without ever having won an Oscar for direction.
Yeah, and that's true.
With the films that he's directed, it's very sad that he has never managed to get that trophy.
So, yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. It's true. Okay, well, let me ask you this then. What have you seen lately that's kind of surprised you, that was either a lot better than you were expecting or a lot worse?
A lot better or a lot worse. I would say, based on the fact that I don't typically like Ari Aster, I liked Bo is Afraid a lot more than I thought I was going to.
Interesting.
I think Ari tends to just go for shock value in his horror movies, and Bo kind of had him back off a little bit, and it was just a better concept, and it wasn't just a straight up horror movie. It was more of this weird existential thing, and I thought that embraced his talents a lot more, and he wasn't worried so much about showing you the most shocking thing he could show you in terms of gore. Right. There were things in that film that are absolutely bizarre, but the whole film is this weird odyssey through life. And that really surprised me. I've just never really been an Ari Aster fan. Other things that I thought I might like and then ended up not liking. I don't know. I actually like the Expendables films. So when the Expendables 4 wasn't good, I was actually one of the few people, I kind of saw it after everybody else, and I was like, I'm probably going to like it. I like the first three. I know these films are dumb, but I think they know they're dumb. But Expendables 4 was legitimately terrible. And then so was The Meg 2. I liked the first one.
Right.
And then the second one, it was just like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Who did this? It was like Warner Brothers was like, well, we don't have Jurassic Park. Can we just make Jurassic Park into The Meg? No, you can't. Yeah. This movie's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, The Meg 2 is just, and I like, I'm down for dumb films. Like, I just, you know, Snakes on a Plane was a great theatrical experience. I was back when I could see, and that audience watching that film at that time knew exactly what they were getting themselves into, and that was a fun experience.
Really? With a name like Snakes on a Plane, they thought they were going to get snakes on a plane? Go figure.
No, but just from the very beginning, when you watch that, there's something when you watch it with a group of people, if you get the right group of people, it's just like a blast, you know?
Totally.
And I happen to have that experience with Snakes on a Plane, but.
I'm willing to give a lot more leeway to a movie that suspends your disbelief right at the beginning. Like if they right at the beginning of the movie do something audacious that's obviously impossible, it's like, okay, this is a romp. I'm going to settle in and I'm going to enjoy the romp. But I hate when a movie goes and it tries to be extremely serious and deep and scientific, and then at the end blows it out with something stupid.
Right.
For me, that just wrecks the experience.
Well, if I can piggyback on Rob's question, John, what movies are you looking forward to that are on the horizon that are coming out?
I'm definitely more of a stay at home and watch films on streaming service, so I don't have to deal with the headphone nonsense. But there are two films this year that I know absolutely for certain I really want to see in theaters. One of them is Deadpool and Wolverine. I'm a huge X-Men fan. I love Deadpool. The first two movies were fire. That's probably my most anticipated film of the year.
That's a summer release, right? That's coming out in June, I think.
That's a summer release, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's the only Marvel film this year, actually. Inside Out 2 is the other film I'm really looking forward to. I'm hoping that Pixar actually does a good job with it and it becomes like a Toy Story 2, or at least an Incredibles 2, because they've done a couple of sequels that have worked really worked, like Toy Story 2, actually. And I think the premise for Inside Out 2 allows itself to be good as they explore different emotions. And as Riley grows up, I think Inside Out 2 has a lot of potential. So I'm really excited for that as well. Those are the two films I'm probably most excited for this year.
I don't know, when's that, there's a new Mad Max movie, Furiosa, is coming up, and I'm not sure if that's a summer release or if that's a next year release.
It is a summer release. It actually comes out in May. It's like a Memorial Day weekend thing.
Yeah, I'm excited about that.
I know that's a U.S. holiday, but I don't know what it is in Canada. But, end of May.
Yeah, I'm excited about that for that. That'll be great, hopefully.
Yeah.
I mean, George Miller, you can't go wrong.
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully it'll be great. However, it is a prequel.
Yeah.
And oftentimes prequels,
I know.
Don't make me mention Prometheus again.
Yeah, exactly. prequels very rarely turn out. So,
exactly.
Plus a movie without your titular character.
What did you say? Oh, what character?
He said tit. I'll call him out on it. Rob said it.
Listen.
Well, let's talk about audio description and porn while we're here. Where the hell is it?
I thought Pornhub was one of the largest producers of audio description these days.
Yeah, well, I think, I don't know if that was a limited run thing or if they're still doing it. I don't know. Someone else did research.
It's porn. They're still doing it.
It's probably on whatever titles they started with. And then depending on how, if there's no metric if no one's using it, because they can see whether or not anybody's using it.
True.
And then why would they create it? You know what I'm saying? So, and this is such a weird topic, but porn is... very much subjective in that people have different tastes. True. So unless you're going to describe a lot of it across various genres, you won't really know if you have an audience for it. If you're just kind of picking very specific, like, and you're like, these 10 videos, audio description. True. Well, if people aren't, if only a couple of people in the community are watching those, it's going to be a small audience. So,
yeah,
but it's that catch 22, right? Those of us in the blind community don't know if it is out there. Nobody's talking about it. So we're not an audience anyway, because we don't know about it. If they want us to know about it, they need to market it.
It's weird because it's like, we do have the audio description project, but I don't think we've ever broached the subject of linking to the porn videos. I mean,
we have
all of the other audio described content.
That's the problem. Nobody's talking about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard about it. So, like, I know people are, but I wouldn't know which titles are,
Sure.
I don't even know how to turn it on.
I'll turn it on. There's another one.
Usually it's just the music that tells you to turn it on.
Well, listen, yeah. If no one's talking about it.
I like how we get onto the porn topic and suddenly everyone, I don't know how to use audio description. Porn is not accessible. No, I don't think that there's a switch for it anywhere. I'm not going to admit I know how to flip that on.
I'm
going
to get Pornhub on our show and talk to them. I just found a
catalog by searching audio description on Pornhub.
Okay.
There you go.
So we'll check you out.
Yeah.
Our resident porn expert.
Click their contact button and invite them to the show.
If no one's talking about it, maybe that'll be a topic for a future episode. And we'll have John back.
I can critique porn audio description.
That's right.
Somebody needs to. We're going to not have any quality or standards.
Those reviews my YouTube channel. So what I really liked about this was that from the beginning you can see that I wouldn't even know where to start with critiquing audio description for porn.
That's true. Well, somebody
well
has
the pizza got delivered on time, and it actually told us the kind of pizza it was.
All right, so AT bit.
And she did get a tip.
AT Banter's going to have to review an episode of something and just critique Pornhub's audio description. One of us have to do it.
Oh, geez.
Somebody has to champion this cause.
I'm just wondering how subjective the script will actually be. You know, big is a very relative term. You know? I don't know.
Yeah, you got to find more adjectives to use. You're right.
Exactly. You'll have to say things like cucumber size versus, cocktail wiener.
Baby dill.
We need more. We need these very visual or things that we can relate to on some sort of other level other than just big.
We'll have to ask our audience.
Yeah.
Provide feedback. Let us know.
Yeah.
We'll do a focus group.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for leading us to a whole new topic there, John.
I'm pretty sure it was Liz or Ryan. I'm pretty sure
someone said tit. Rob.
It was a collective effort. Let's just say
it's true.
Can only get away with that if you're a birder.
Wait, what? I don't think I got it. That went over my head.
Yeah, some of the people will get that. Never mind.
Drop us an email if you got that. If you got Steve's joke. Steve's joke of the week. You have to really think about this one. We're making the audience work this week. John, we want to thank you so much for coming on and chatting.
For sticking around.
Sticking around. That's right. We really appreciate it. See, there you go. Perfect.
That's what all our guests say.
We love that. Yeah.
If I wasn't here, I'd be on YouPorn listening to audio description. So.
That's right.
Well, give us a full report. You can come back on for the next episode.
That's right. Yeah. Listen, we'll make it a weekly bit. tell people in the audience where they can find you online and how they can help the channel.
You can find me at my YouTube is Mac the Movie Guy is the handle, so I guess it's youtube.com/MacTheMovieGuy. My website, MacTheMovieGuy.com. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, or Threads at MacTheMovieGuy. That's it, I think.
Awesome.
That's everything. So.
All right, John, thanks again. And we'll keep in touch.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks. We'll talk to you guys later.
Perfect.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, John.
Take care.
Great to meet you, John.
Man, a lot of ideas at the end of that.
Yeah.
None
good, but okay.
Creative, just not good. Sorry.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Story of our lives.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I think, you know, I think that more channels like this that are out there only help the audio descriptive cause.
Yeah, I think it's fun or funny him talking about how, you know, there's people out there who have been blind longer than him who are not aware of audio description.
Yeah, right.
That surprised me. I thought most people in the community would be aware of that by now, but I guess I'm wrong.
But it's only by word of mouth. Nobody talks about it.
Or right? Through the services that you have access to.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, you know, if you bring up Netflix, it doesn't say, check out our audio description catalog here, right?
No, it's true.
You have no idea if it...
you got to go hunting for it. Yeah,
you do.
Yeah. It needs to be more front and center.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is really dumb, right? Like, you know, Netflix and you know, all the studios are doing the work and paying for these tracks to be built, but they're not pushing, they're not marketing them. It's all just in the background, right? So, yeah, it is kind of weird. I don't know. I think the key is to get those creatives involved and to start doing some creative things with it.
Well, like when we had the audio description project on the podcast a couple months back, you know, it's kind of the only resource guide for you to find out what's on what platform that has audio description, right? And that's a shame.
Yeah, it is. Well, anything else to say about any of that? Or shall we get out of here?
Let's get out of here. Wait,
yeah.
What?
Breaking news.
No, breaking news from Steve. Dad joke of the week.
Uh-oh.
You already gave it to us.
No, he didn't.
Was the birder? Wasn't that a joke?
it was technically a dad joke. I guess you could say it was a dad joke. But I don't know if it was really the best dad joke.
No, we want like a full.
Okay, fine. We demand
dad
our
joke.
Audience. Our audience demands.
Our ratings demand it.
Yeah.
Okay, I got it.
Okay.
Here we go.
So every morning before work, I announce loudly to my family that I'm going to go jogging, but then I don't go. It's a running joke.
Wow.
I love it.
Yeah. And feel those ratings going up.
Got another running joke. Okay.
Another running joke?
Yeah, I did. I recently ran an ultra marathon in northern Sweden. I realized that I'd gone way off course as soon as I crossed the finish line.
Wow.
Nice.
Okay, everybody, you got two for
wow.
One.
Well, nice. We haven't had one for a couple of weeks, so we got to make up
true.
For that.
And it was themed and everything, so I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Nicely done.
Pretty damn impressive. All right. Hey, Liz.
Hey, Pickle Toes.
Where can people find us?
They can find us at atbanter.com.
Hey, you know what? They can also drop us an email if they so desire at cowbell@atbanter.com.
Wow, he's two for two.
That was, again, a solid strike.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Well done.
Yeah, really well done. Wow, jeez.
Yeah.
She's been practicing, I think. Spending the week down in the guitar dungeon.
That's right.
Doing
just
those strikes.
Practicing, doing his percussive maintenance.
Yeah, no, it's good. Perfect. Hey, where else can they find us?
They can find us on Facebook and X and Instagram and Mastodon.
There you go. All right. That is going to about do it for us this week. Big thanks, of course, to John for joining us. And we will see everybody next week. Three for three.
This podcast has been brought to you by Canadian Assistive Technology, providing low vision and blindness solutions, as well as physical access solutions and augmentative communication aids across Canada. Find us online at www.canastech.com, or if you're in the Vancouver Lower Mainland, visit our storefront at number 106-828 West 8th Avenue in Vancouver. That's one block off Broadway at Willow. You can reach us by phone, toll-free at 1-844-795-8324, or by email at sales@canastech.com.